seems like the city has indeed become a bit of a sanitised place, if you like, over recent years with all these controls and regulations. I think there's a lot of talk about the problem being the kind of the expansion of private developments and the control of private estates and you know, the way that the city has been shut down through those kind of developments recently. I think while that's true, I think there's kind of a lot more to it, and I want to try and just explore some of that over the next sort of 10 minutes or so. I think kind of what we're really seeing is in many ways the kind of the bigger problem is the invasion of the public authorities, of the private citizen, and the control of the private citizen rather than just the privatisation of public space. So in order to kind of see what we mean by that, I think as soon as you say the city's been sanitised, then it invites the question, well, kind of, what is a city? What ideally would it be? And it was a question that was the modernist writer Ford Madox Ford put to himself in the early 20th century when he wrote a really fantastic book actually called The Soul of London. And for the book, he kind of recorded all these forays that he conducted right the way throughout London. You know, he travelled in all these different forms of transport, and he kind of went investigating all these different areas of London. And you know, he records this for the book, and he just describes these constantly shifting scenes of congestion and bright lights and poverty and wealth and crowds and loneliness and strangers and new experiences, social experimentation that was going on at the time, that a city was really growing and quite dynamic. And I think what really comes through is kind of the intensity and the kind of uncertainty and unpredictability, actually, of the whole experience. You know, city life is pretty messy at times, fairly demanding, often quite risky in many ways. And it's not necessarily something to celebrate that it's risky, but nevertheless, I think that is a kind of an important part of a city. And in the end, he actually declined to define what a city was, because he recognised that, in many ways, its essence was a sort of certain amount of intangibility, like a sort of continuous movement and flux. And the word he used actually to describe London was illimitable. He thought, you just couldn't limit it. You couldn't define it. It was a special place, not just because it was, of vast size and there was a vast number of people, but because of the assimilative powers of the whole place. It could just absorb all these people and this energy and kind of keep on moving. And I think if you compare that sort of outlook to attitudes today, we don't celebrate a culture of congestion today. We kind of fear congestion. We kind of fear that hustle and bustle, people, crowds, or what have you, freedom of movement. And that really cities have become primarily associated with things like pollution and crime and ill health and unhappiness. And, it's not that those weren't features of cities 100 years ago. They obviously were, and in abundance, actually. It's just that, they didn't become the defining aspects of cities because they were something bigger that you could engage with. I think it's also quite interesting to compare Ford's kind of engagement with flux and change and his refusal to delimit the city with how we think about cities just now. Because actually, we constantly try to delimit them. We constantly try to define them. You just got to think about the terms that we use. Cities are now, they always have a prefix. They're always safe or livable or healthy or eco. Or sometimes not even cities at all, actually. You kind of like cities too big a concept to handle, so it's an urban village or a sustainable community, as if, the whole thing is all too problematic. And we're always trying to list the characteristics of them as to try and define them. So they promote X amount of diversity, Y amount, they curtail Y amount of unhealthy activities, they reduce Z amount of carbon. Constantly trying to define everything. So, certainly I think there's this kind of something gone in the sort of boisterousness, intangibility of the city of the past. There's also been a lot of discussion over the last few decades, a couple of decades in particular, as to why. And one of the main problems that's usually flagged up is the privatisation of public space, where private estates take over areas of cities. You know, the shopping mall is the kind of obvious example for years and years. But in recent times, that's actually changed, so that you even see entire areas of cities like Liverpool, which are open street form, which are actually under control of management and of developers. You know, 32 streets in the centre of Liverpool are actually, you know, under private control. So in many ways, kind of not a city at all. City of London's another example. Paternoster Square has been in the news quite a lot recently because the Occupy movement wanted to protest there, and of course they got thrown out and had to camp in front of St Paul's. And you know, it's definitely the case that these controls are very restrictive. If you look at the City of London and the controls that the Corporation of London place in it, then there's things like no temporary structures, which obviously rules out the tents, no tree climbing, rollerblading, no walking where you're not permitted. No radio, record players, cassette players, kind of tells you that these things weren't exactly written yesterday. No mules, no asses, no goats or cattle. So, I mean, these things are long-standing in some ways, actually. So, as I say, I don't really want to defend that sort of privatisation, but it seems to me that there's a bit more to the problems that we've got just now. Now, the first thing is, If you kind of look at the focus on the users of public space, then this isn't new. It kind of goes back, and you could see gradual development of that over the 1960s, 1970s and 1980s, where the concern shifted away from the kind of physical regeneration of places, you know, build a better place, then people have better life chances, into a much more sort of a much greater focus on the users. So the whole idea starts to become much more that actually it was these kind of people who didn't behave or whatever that were kind of at the root of physical decline, kind of subtle, turning round of the whole problem of what the problem was with places. Secondly, I mean, while private estates might be, you know, interested in regulating behaviour for maximising returns and minimising all the sort of liabilities that they've got, The controls that are exerted by public authorities, I think, are no less invasive. So all the cities in the UK, if you want to look at the kind of restrictions that they have, they all got things, the gating orders, for example, dispersing orders where, you know, young groups of lads can't gather without being dispersed at night. Controls on drinking, you know, wandering around the centre of Birmingham tonight, they were very evident. Even sort of middle class picnics are kind of can be foiled under that. And then there's all the sort of stuff that Jason mentioned, the licensing of photography and leafleting and all the rest of it. And all of these are obviously, you know, there's enabling legislation that was introduced by governments over the past 20, 30 years. So rather than the privatisation of public space, I think really what we're seeing is public authorities taking much, much more of a control over how we act and sort of determining behaviour. And I think, you know, it's quite important to ask, well, what actually is driving some of this stuff? And because, you know, a lot of it's associated with things like CCTV, there's the idea that it's kind of Big Brother that's acting here. And I think it's quite important to kind of get in perspective what is actually going on with this, because, you know, increasingly today, it's not fear of the state that governs our behaviour quite a lot in cities. In many ways, it's fear of ourselves, actually. You know, we kind of don't really trust ourselves for how we act together within public spaces. And that kind of, I think, provides fertile ground for the way that all these controls are and these regulatory mechanisms are taking hold. So, for example, if you think about something like CCTV, Jason mentioned that the kind of enforced CCTV that's come up this week in the papers, but actually there's, you know, broad support for CCTV. A recent survey found that 72% would be upset if cameras were taken away, and 62% of people wanted even more cameras. So you kind of, in a sense, we're kind of internalised all this kind of fearful stuff, and we you know, that's become something that you know, we're quite scared of the way of what happens out there in public space. I think one of the biggest problems is the expansion of problematic behaviour. So, we've now got guidance on how to behave. Things that would normally in the past, a confident adult would have dealt with pretty easily. Instructions on how to act on crowded trains, or local authorities setting out lanes in on shopping streets so that we're guided in busy streets as to how we actually walk up and down the road. It's as if there's this constant feeling that we're not actually able to negotiate public spaces ourselves, but we actually need some help and some reassurance to be able to negotiate these things. I think it's here that you kind of see some of the much more sort of subtle, but in many ways more problematic aspects of the regulations, because the impact of organising our behaviour is that it kind of removes the ambiguity of public space quite a lot. It removes the informality that we enjoy within public spaces, and that is actually an incredibly important thing, because to be able to form relationships of trust and to be able to interact properly, then I think you do need that kind of space free from regulation and free from controls to be able to negotiate those relationships on your own. So just to conclude, really, and to emphasise, I think, how deep-rooted this problem is, it's worth pointing out that actually it's often people who seem quite radical and who seem opposed to privatisation of public space that are actually, in many ways, at the forefront of creating even more problems for ourselves. So if you think about something like Occupy London, and you go and have a look on their website, and what you'll find is their Safer Spaces policy, which is about 15, 20 kind of provisions about how they want you to behave within their encampments or whatever. And really, what's really striking is how far they go into setting the terms for governing interpersonal relations. These become, not something that you negotiate themselves, but something that they set the terms for. So you're not allowed to drink alcohol, which replicates public controls. You must respect each other's physical and emotional boundaries. Always get explicit verbal consent before touching someone or crossing boundaries. That you're not meant to judge or to put each other down. You're always meant to be aware of your language. And if you go outside of these restrictions, then there's the mediation processes that you're expected to go through in order to sort of be able to sort the whole thing out. So it kind of really takes away that whole sort of informality of city life that I think is quite important. So the idea that city life is free, that public space is free and should be flourishing, is kind of dimmed by the expectation that we've all got to engage in a certain amount of etiquette and proper behaviour and how we react together. And that whole idea of tolerating people in public space, that you kind of give a bit of space to allow people to behave how they will. You might not like it, but nevertheless you kind of put up with it, which was a fairly sort of standard outlook in the past, is kind of really been constrained. You expect everybody to behave in the exact way that you want them. So I think to conclude, the problem to me is that kind of we're really defining all the ambiguity out of public space, and we kind of need to, I think, be useful to discuss a bit more about why that is, but also something I've not tackled, what we might be able to do about it.